And so that brings me to one other point. You called them vouchers, and I don't object to that word. It's not, I mean, it's the word that Milton Friedman used in 1955, the government role in education. It's a fine enough word. I don't hate it. But what a lot of people think of vouchers, and what Friedman was himself suggesting, because this other idea hadn't quite been thought of yet, was taxes go to the central government. Central government sends a voucher, a coupon, a gift certificate back out to all the families, which they can spend however they want on education. Mm-hmm. Like it's earmarked for education, but within that realm, these verified education expenses, you can spend it on any of these verified education expenses. And that there's at least an implicit promise that we'll sort of stay out of the way other than verifying what you can spend it on. One of the developments, and this was actually sort of a blessing in disguise, because in the United States, a lot of state constitutions were, in my opinion, misinterpreted to say that school vouchers were against the state constitution, because the state constitution says you have to fund the public school. They argued that these vouchers could be spent on things other than the public school. Some of them were on First Amendment anti-establishment of religion grounds. Some of them were on the state constitution says we have to fund public schools. This is an avenue to not fund the public schools. Ergo, this breaks the state constitution. Either way, I think they were wrong. But what that, necessity being the mother of invention, what even Milton Friedman's own education charity, which the Milton and Rose Friedman Foundation was renamed EdChoice after, I believe, Rose's death. I think that was in their will that they rename it no longer after the Friedmans, after whichever the last of them was died. So it's now called EdChoice, and they've become one of the biggest proponents of a new model called an education savings account, which is a little different in the sense that this money is never officially taxed. So it's deferred from taxation first, and it's either controlled by an office of the state government, which is less good, or by a charity, which was more good, that can confirm that things are being spent on verified education expenses. And that's basically the only, because it's not government money, it's not tax money, then they have no say. And they're like, structurally, legally, they wouldn't be able to, and courts have said, well, and actually Carson v. Macon, a Supreme Court decision from this last term, justifiably buried in a lot of other wonderful Supreme Court decisions. But Carson v. Macon, a U.S. Supreme Court decision from this last term, said, yeah, Maine, if you're going to give people money for this state tuition program, you can't exclude religious schools just because they're religious, mm-hmm. from this tuition assistance program. And that was even not this education savings account design. The education savings account design is even more safe from the government than saying, okay, here's how you have to spend this money, or okay, if a school is going to take this money, they have to change their admission requirements to take in everybody, whether they agree with the religion or the purpose of the school at all or not, or whatever, right? Is like, that really cuts down on the ability for there to be strings and makes it much more philosophically supportable for those of us who see an idolatrous pretension in the state and would like to see it cut down to size, that definitely makes makes it even more philosophically supportable and even more like what we would want to see. So those developments are extremely those developments are extremely heartening. And I would say there's, I think, so much demand now for parent empowerment, for money following the child, that I think it's, especially in red states, but not just in red states, I think there's going to be so much that again, it's become almost definitional of what it is to be a Republican. Lots of that 0.1% of Republicans, 0.1% of teacher union money that was going to Republicans. A lot of that money they're going to start to be able to save, because these guys are going down and they're going to have a much harder time even finding Republicans to support. And obviously for now, that has driven the other party in the other direction. It's made them more reliant on the teacher union money. Right now there's a teacher's union member in the White House, Dr. Jill Biden. Her doctorate is in education, and she's a member of the National Education Association. And then the Bidens are close friends with Randy Weingarten, the president of the other major union in the United States, and the actually much more politically active. they're both quite very politically active, but much more politically hardline, maybe I should say, much more just blatantly Democratic Party rather than being about representing teachers. So for now, you've had a ratchet effect in the other direction. But I think ultimately, in the last Democratic primary, Cory for president, Cory Booker, who has been a school choice proponent in the past, he sort of ratcheted back towards downplaying that significantly, at the very least, perhaps even moving away from it entirely, because that's become even more unpopular in his party. Whereas Barack Obama ran on school choice, to some extent, at least. And so you definitely, and charter schools in particular, the Obama administration was trying to encourage more charter schools, more accountability, merit pay, like they were in on that sort of thing. But I think that's relatively temporary, right? Because I think there's, it's like we've seen if you take the parents for granted and you say parents don't get to have a say in their child's education, then you can't even win a state like Virginia. We saw that happen directly.
Also, you can kill your kids after they're born.
Yeah. But Virginia, which was increasingly not so much a purple state even anymore, it was increasingly moving into the blue column. Even there, you can have a pretty, you can have a pretty strong surge against that kind of ideology. I think you've seen some signs there that this is not staking out the maximalist like teacher union position is not a winning play on the other side of things, because teachers unions overplayed their hands in the global lockdowns. And so there's definitely a bit of a backlash. And by the way, I would say, you know, we've talked about sort of the two big litmus tests for Republicans being abortion and school choice. In the political center, and even headed onto the political left side of the aisle, school choice is way more popular than the pro-life position. Now, that's not a moral argument, but I'm just saying practically, I think you're gonna see even Democrats tack back to the center on school choice, just because I think there's such a powerful demand for it. And you know, you've mentioned Corey DeAngelis. You can see him just dismantle these arguments pretty easily on Twitter all day, every day. Yeah. Right. Because they fall apart at the least scrutiny. And so, you know, the most predictable thing ever is some politician somewhere, tweets that school choice is defunding public schools. And he quote tweets them. Why would school choice defund public schools? And they block him, right? Like,
because they're so awful, and that's why they need more money. Yeah. Or the other side where he goes, but you sent your kids to a private school. Yeah. Why is it good for you and not good for parents of your district or whatever?
Yeah. You went to a private school. Was one. Yeah. You went to a private school. Your kids go to a private school. Definitely.
The Obamas sent theirs to private schools too. And why was it good for them to shop around in schools, but not everybody in the nation that they were, you know, sending to public schools only?
Yeah. I love the West Wing, but in the last season of the West Wing, the Santoses decide to send their kids to the public school. And I'm like, no, don't buy it.
Yep.
Never going to happen.
It's when you know it's a work of fiction. Yeah.
Yeah. Never going to happen. DC public schools in that year, I can't remember what year that was. Never, ever, ever going to happen. Yeah. No one who could afford not to is sending their kid to a DC public school in 2005 or whatever that year was. Absolutely. And my pop cultural ignorance came back to bite me, because there was this one politician. He must have been a Michigan politician, because over and over and over, people were tweeting at him, "You went to Cranbrook, that's a private school." And I got the real world reference that, okay, Cranbrook is a private school in Detroit and, or near Detroit or whatever. And I got the real world reference, and then, Googled it. Okay, this politician went to Cranbrook. Okay. I didn't get why everyone was saying those exact words in that exact format over and over and over again. And I needed someone to not get it from the other direction and go, oh, I didn't know why everyone was tweeting 8 Mile references of this guy. I didn't realize he actually went to Cranbrook, a private school. And so I didn't get the 8 Mile reference. I needed someone to not get it from the other direction for me to realize what was what was happening there.
Michigan for movies, they have 8 Mile and Prancer. And I guess Escanaba in the Moonlight. So I guess those are our movies' claims of fame for a little bit there.